Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Joe Ryan and with Bob Birch, two grumpy old sports writers, getting ready to talk to you about the world of sports, good, bad, indifferent, and just what we like to bitch about. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing okay. This is sort of a somber day for Yankee fans because this is the 40th anniversary of the passing of Thurman Munson. So, you know, we were reflecting on that a little bit early. We'll talk about that maybe in a little bit. And of course, he wants to talk about, you know, Nick Boncani.
Yeah, Nick Boncani, the leader of the Miami Dolphins. Who passed away this week. Another guy who, I guess, dementia, this terrible onslaught of dementia that's happening to all these football players you've admiring, the Warriors who are being taken down by the CTE. He donated his brain to be examined, that hopefully they can use it in research so future generations of football players don't have to go about this. But, I mean, Nick Boncani, Notre Dame grad, played for the Patriots, then got traded to the Dolphins, and his career took off. And like we were talking before he came on the air, I mean, he was like the Mike Singletary of his day, a little undersized, Smart player, always in the right positions, and the leader of a team that went to three straight Super Bowls, won two of them, including one undefeated season, could have gone to a fourth if it wasn't for the Steelers dynasty starting. The Steelers dynasty really ended the Dolphin dynasty.
I think Boncani is one of those players whose greatness gets diminished with the passage of time. You know, it's been a long time since you played in the 70s, and it's certainly for contemporary fans, they're not going to know how great he was. And I suppose that happens with a lot of players, and it's kind of sad. I mean, he wasn't like an all-time great, but he was a really good player on a really good defense. And, he had the situation with his son being paralyzed. And, again, it's always sad when you lose an athlete that's part of your youth. I mean, we're old enough to remember him in the 70s. And I think you probably forgot about Nick Boncani. How great he really was.
He was in the things he did, like you said, the Miami Project, when his son got paralyzed playing in football in college, the things he did for spinal research that has really come a long way because of the things the Miami Project started. Plus, he was a lawyer, and he was an agent for players, and he was a broadcaster, and he was one of the more interesting people and well-spoken. I generally thought about at the time he was one of the best players in football at the time. But yeah, now people would sit there and say, well, he'd be undersized, wouldn't be playing. And I hate that. The fact is he did play. He was a Hall of Fame player and he should be remembered. And like I said, the things that as a child growing up, when you saw Nick Boncani, you wanted him on your team if you could get him.
Yeah. And, he became a spokesman for his son and maintained a great attitude with, as did the son, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was out there. He was in the public. He had interests beyond football, like you said, broadcaster, lawyer. It's just, a smart guy and a great player. And I hope fans of today can do some research and, read about his life story and determine that, this was a good player in when the AFC was really emerging he'll be missed.
And then, of course, like you said, Thurman Munson, and what comes to mind with Thurman Munson, and maybe it's going to sound corny and maybe it's going to sound, Joe, you must be on drugs to think of this, but the kind of the feelings like a Buddy Holly thing, you know, dying in the plane crash. So young. It was like you, that Don McLean song, The Day the Music Died. It was kind of that August 2nd in 1979. That year, it was like the day baseball died.
Well, Buddy died in February.
No, it's not about the time of year. It's about the tragedy, the suddenness of a plane crash taking away a star like that. And it's just, I don't know. I just, that just came to mind to
me. Okay. I don't know if I would have made that connection, but you know, people say he shouldn't have flown alone. Well, I guess he had two other people with him. He was just getting his pilot's license. You know, he wanted to spend a little extra time with his family before coming back to begin the next series. But Thurman Munson was a beloved player.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of an unlikely character. I mean, he's gruff. His uniform was always dirty. He was never clean-shaven. He didn't fit the profile of a matinee idol, certainly. I think he was kind of jealous of Fisk because he might never hair out of place. And they were huge rivals when that rivalry was probably as intense as it ever was. You know, couple of fights. Munson was as blue-collar as they get,
mm-hmm.
You know, with the grit and the passion, the heart, and played hurt. You could probably say maybe Fisk was a better overall player. I mean,
I don't know about that.
You could debate it.
They were different skills. I mean,
different
Fisk,
skills.
Fisk was more of a, you know, the thing about Fisk was he was along the lines of a Johnny Bench, your classic power hitting catcher. But Thurman was, first of all, he was faster than most people understood. He was a fast runner until his knees started going at the end of his career.
He had a great arm firing the ball down to second. And he was a good defensive catcher.
Thurman, I remember late in his career when he had to fire the ball underhanded, but still got the guy out at second base.
Yeah.
I just remember him as, the thing that always amazed me about him, he was probably the best hit-and-run hitter I ever saw.
Back when teams actually did hit him.
Yeah, I mean, he could wait and see who was covering. I mean, I saw him at times wait, and if the shortstop was covering, he could punch the ball through the shortstop hole. I mean, he might have been the best hit-and-run contact hitter I ever saw. He always advanced that runner to third base, it seemed.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't have a lot of power, good RBI man, just a good gritty baseball
clutch
player.
Like I said,
clutch as hell. And I mean, and the thing is that he was the kind of guy who played through injuries and to the detriment of his career. I think that's what tore up his shoulder late in his career. I think, you know, just the pounding of the plate. Great at blocking the plate. I used to love about him with blocking the plate. He was so smart because he wouldn't dig in at the plate. He would go out and get the ball and dive back into the runner. Kind of footballish, but it also I think it saved his knees. He didn't want his knees hanging out there or to take a crack like Ray Fosse did in that All-Star game.
Today he probably would have played 15, 20 less games and maybe extended his career.
Yeah, I mean
he was getting even though he was only 32, I think getting near the end of his career.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, because while he played through injuries, they were starting to take a toll. But I think the dichotomy with him and Fisk was fascinating because they were really two different people. I mean, Fisk was much better looking. Fisk was someone you would think of as a natural athlete, not much. I mean, he was a good athlete, but you know, the physical profile might not. He was pudgy. He was Humpty Dumpty.
He was Middle America. He was Fisk was the kid, the central casting guy from up in New Hampshire, and Munson was from the coal mining country of Middle America, Ohio, and you know that area where you would work in, you know, factory workers and truck drivers and you know diners and stuff like that.
Yep.
And
that's why he appealed to the average fan, I think.
Well, I think he appealed because what he did, and he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't charming.
Oh, he was not charming.
But he was he was the leader of that Yankee team, and every Yankee believed in him.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, you know, Ron Guidry, you know, would love that guy. Everybody on that team loved that guy.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate. I actually went to the game at first game of Yankee Stadium after the death of Munson, and it was really an incredible night.
That was a Friday game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But now you restored about him, though, and off the field, he was the nicest guy in the world.
Well, I think,
he would have time for people. He would relate to people.
I think the thing is about celebrities is the problem about celebrities is they get good press, they get bad press. Sometimes you have a guy who you meet him. He just had a fight with his wife. he's having a bad day, and that's the only time you'll ever meet him, and you think he's a jerk. Also, sometimes after he's given out 25 autographs and he's got to go do his warm-ups and you walk away from that little kid, that's what people think sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, let's face facts, we're both in the media. You could tell, you know, sometimes you're talking to a guy after a game, and a tough game, I mean, or you're a manager or a player, and they're like, really, do I have to answer more questions? Didn't they just answer that?
He hated the media.
Well, I don't know if he hated the media.
He had a contentious relationship with the media.
Well, I think, you know, you get what you deserve sometimes. Sometimes the media goes overboard. I mean, you got to work the relationship with these guys, and you have to be fair to them. And, I mean, I think he was very hurt by that Straw that Stirs the Drink article that came out.
Yes, he was.
He felt the New York media backstabbed him. And I think that really pushed him to a different relationship with him, with the New York media. Because I don't remember being that bad before that incident where he would be so contentious with the media. I think if you did a little study on the history, I think that really turned his – he was never – he wasn't the brightest guy in the room. I mean, but he was
he took that personally. I mean, who was this guy coming in? I've been with this – franchise for 8 or 9 years. We just won the pennant.
Right.
And
I was the MVP. And
he might have been a little insecure.
And I think also, I think, since it came out, I think it came out in the New York publication, I thought probably he thought maybe that he could have been forewarned. The guy could have called him up and said, hey, Reggie said this about you. Do you have anything to say back to it?
Before reading it, yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing it in print.
Or just say, exactly. I mean, that's...
But the game was a war to him. He would do anything to win. And, you know, maybe he helped some people the wrong way, although I don't know.
He didn't
admire the guy to the hilt.
He was a player's player.
He was a player's player. He was a gamer. He was
right.
A blue-collar player.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of those guys around anymore.
There
but
isn't.
I was thinking about Thurman. In the middle of 77 season, he's were floundering. I think they had that incident in – it was it 77 or 78 when they had that incident in Boston where Billy Yank raised you off the field?
77,
okay.
No, it's 78.
Okay. But even in 77, I mean, Munson said, okay, we don't have to like this guy, but we have to play. We have the talent to win. We won last year. Just put our differences aside. And I think it was that attitude that turned that season around. And when the Yankees stopped fighting amongst themselves – and started fighting the opponents, they took off.
Well, I think a lot of that team was kind of disrupted by, you know, I think there was a core of players back then. I'm a Met fan looking at it from this, but I think the guy I felt that got mistreated in that circumstance and no one ever talked about was, you know, Sparky Lyle. I mean, he suddenly became persona non grata because they go out and get a shiny new Goose Gossage. And after he pretty much gave them the World Series the year before, at least got him into the championship. I mean, he was so important against Kansas City. So I think what Thurman was mad about, I think what he took personally was, I think he liked the guys that were there that had built it. And then all of a sudden George was going out and getting his shiny new toys, and it kind of disrupted, you know, his belief system and loyalty and everything else.
I think the feeling after 76, after they got blasted by the Reds, they needed one final piece.
No, but still.
And Reggie was that final piece. Could they have won in 77 without him? Maybe.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't deny that Reggie took them over the top and was that final piece. I don't know if it was so much going out and getting somebody, but it's just Reggie's attitude.
Yeah, but the thing is, like I said,
who is this person?
Like I said, though, I mean, you know, he was Sparky Lyle's catcher for years, and now all of a sudden he's got Goose Gossage and Sparky's a nothing. You know what I mean?
Sparky still had a major role on that 78 team as a setup guy, didn't he?
To go from being first of all, there was no thing as a setup guy back then. You were the trash guy. You know, there was the closer, and then there was the guys who came in on a blowout and just went out there and just mopped up.
Okay.
He went from being a star to being a mop-up guy. I mean, the next big thing he did for the Yankees was bring back Dave Rigetti in the trade. So, I mean, you know, I don't think
Lyle's role was that diminished in 78.
I think you look back, it was. But
you'd have to look at the numbers.
Well, anyway.
But I don't think anybody had any animosity toward Gossage. It was Reggie.
Wasn't there a famous fight with Gossage a couple of years later with Cliff
Johnson?
Yeah. So I mean, don't tell me there's no animosity with Gossage. I mean, I'm sorry. I think I don't want to make this into a referendum on the 78 Yankees here, but to me, I just think that part of Thurman's nature was jealousy, and part of it, I think, one of the things that made him a little unhappier on the Yankees when it had to be the Yankees was he saw friends of his get replaced all the time and pushed out of town for these big-time free agent signings, and I don't think he was really happy about it. I think he was the kind of guy who was loyal to his friends to a hilt, and I don't think he was really happy with a bunch of the stuff that was going on. But I know Thurman Munson. That's just my assumption of it.
It happens all the time. Now, maybe not as much back then.
Okay.
But
yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It was a tragic thing. It happened 40 years ago, and I hope, you know, I remember I was working that day at a Stop and Shop, and
yeah.
A good friend of mine came in and told me it happened.
Yeah, my friend called me, and I refused to believe it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a tragic day. It was a tragic day for all. As a Met fan, you didn't celebrate. No one's ever happy, but, I mean, you cared that he died because you cared about Thurman Munson because he was if you're talking about the 70s New York sports scene, Thurman Munson's right up there with Namath, Clyde Frazier,
sure.
Willis Reed, all the greats of the 70s
sure.
Sports. He was somebody you could celebrate, and there wasn't a lot of winning that was going on in the 70s. You know, outside of the Yankees in the middle, the Mets just to start, and the Knicks to start, and the Jets to start. Outside of the Yankees, there wasn't a lot to celebrate in New York City sports at the time. So he was kind of like somebody that all of us, who whether you be a Met fan or a Yankee fan, could admire.
City in the 70s was a rough place.
Yeah, it was. It was.
You know, and again, Munson sort of represented that grittiness of the city.
Yeah. So speaking of the Yankees, and, you know, making moves that aren't made.
The Stan Pat Yankees.
They Brian Cashman, my God, has there ever – I don't know. I'm trying to think of another situation with so much anticipation outside of my sex life. So much anticipation it turned out to be a whimper than this. I mean, my God, for a month they were shot. The only thing they didn't say was Lefty Grove was coming back to pitch for the year. Yeah, I mean, you had White, you had Madison Bumgarner's coming. I mean, if Paul Revere did this, the British would have invaded. It was ridiculous. I mean, and he didn't, and it really, I know, I will play a little bit of what Brian said about this, so, and then we can get into it. I got this up. Where's my little Cashman here? You know, here's Brian Cashman.
It wasn't for lack of effort. We, you know, engaged all teams. Some players, obviously, we didn't match up for. Other circumstances, those players weren't really available, even though they were, you know, widely talked about in the public setting. Some of them, obviously, you know, had some, whatever it was, contract status issues or medical issues. So it was just a lot of different, you know, individual circumstances that basically put us in a position to to not be able to complete anything. You know, as my job obviously is constantly trying to improve this club, and you know, we're doing it for a long time, and you know, and just in terms of the circumstance, we didn't get close to anything, but we certainly knocked on all doors, had a lot of ideas and exchange of ideas with clubs and in our effort to improve. But the fallback has always been, we know we have a good club already. And you know, the job is to obviously look under every rock to see if you can turn up something to add to what we already have. And, just, you know, didn't get that done. You know, I feel comfortable with walking away from everything that was in front of me because, those weren't real opportunities as far as my conversations were going. You know, so the fallback is to look in that room and the players we have and feel really good about those guys. Hope that the ones we have that are coming off the DL at some point come back and join the party and keep this thing rolling.
No.
Now, what you said there, a lot is true. I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming he kicked on a lot of doors. I don't dispute that. I don't dispute it at all. And what he said is true. They do have a good team. It's 30 games over 500 and should be a playoff team. But, you know, the speculation is that their pitching is not a shambles, but is shaky would be a good term for it. And last week was historically shaky. And, you know, you see the lighthouse, he's hitting the rocks. I mean, what do you think as a Yankee fan?
As we got closer and closer to the deadline and they didn't make a move, I started to believe that they were not going to do any moves. So I can't say that I was surprised they didn't make a move. I can't say that I was pleased that they didn't make a move. I think this rotation is mediocre to bad. It was exacerbated last week, maybe a little bit of an aberration, but they don't get length. They're asking their bullpen to get 12 outs, 13 outs, 14 outs almost every night. And I don't know how you can win in the postseason like that. We've talked about that. And yes, there were circumstances this year that might not have come up last year. I mean, Greinke wasn't coming to the Yankees.
No.
He has a no-trade clause. He's got anxiety issues.
Right.
He would have been eaten alive in New York.
He couldn't have taken it. There was no way.
Sonny Gray.
I
mean, Baumgartner and Sard were taken off the market after the team kind of got back in the race. Okay. But I think what Yankee fans are going to be shaking their head about is how Strowman and Bauer end up with non-contending teams. I mean, maybe the Mets are now contending, but they're still under 500. The Reds are definitely under 500. And, you know, Torres is untouchable. Okay. But there was nothing that they could do with their minor leaguers to swing a deal. I don't know.
Well, that's the whole thing, Michael. And that's what we had a long talk about. You and I were on the phone yesterday for over an hour talking about this. And it begs the question, for all the bluster about the Yankees having this fantastic farm system, it doesn't seem like people are willing to take a lot of their farm system outside of the people you've heard about. But, you know, the Gleyber Torres, it was the centerpiece everybody wants. And when you think about it, he isn't even a Yankee farmhand. They got somebody else.
Yeah.
So this farm system that they're supposed to be putting together, and I was thinking about this on the way tonight going, or today, about this farm system that the Yankees are together, where is the talent they're developing? I mean, Clint Frazier comes from the Indians organization.
Well, you got Davey Garcia.
Oh, okay, but I mean, at the major league level, when you look around, outside of Aaron Judge, you say Brett Gardner, but that was a decade ago.
Sanchez?
Yeah, Sanchez. Okay, that's so your 25 roster.
A disaster again.
No, but your 25-man roster, how many guys has this farm system that everybody's touting is the best farm system in baseball?
Andujar?
Yeah, but it's one year. Yeah, he was good, and now he's injured, so we'll see. Think about a guy that you can actually say, man, like the Braves system, it's like they, what they did in the 90s, they're redoing again. You know, they took 10 years and they put it back together, and now they're doing it all over again.
Hicks
came from somewhere else. He came from the Twins.
Yeah.
So maybe this farm system that everybody's talking about, the Yankee farm system, is full of talent that's not there. That Carillion or whatever his name is that they traded for Sonny Gray hasn't pitched. And, you know, everybody they seem to trade to other teams become failures, even though they're non-touchables in the Brian Cashman catalog for years. When they go to other teams, they seem to not become stars or all-stars or become these great players. So maybe what holds the Yankees back is they do it all with smoke and mirrors. Like I was kidding with you the other day. They were telling me that Timmy Martinez and Scotty McGregor were coming for years. I mean,
Yankees have been known occasionally to overhype their players.
You would say that.
I would grant that.
And the other thing, like the list I gave you, and please give me credit for going back 20 years to examine the trading patterns of Brian Cashman, and he never, you'll argue with me, I'll let you say your great Brian Cashman trade. Go ahead.
Well, I think the David Justice trade was a great trade and one of the best trades that he's actually ever made.
Okay.
I mean, I will tell you it was 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Same. I think let's look at some of these. I mean, Torres could turn out to be a great trade.
Yeah.
I mean, Luke Voit looks like a pretty good trade. If the guy could stay healthy, I don't know how you get a sports running from swinging the bat. That's another topic. I mean, the Miller-Chapman trade, pretty good.
Well, Miller is Clint Frazier now. Whatever Clint Frazier turns into. Is if Clint Frazier doesn't turn into a great player, then that trade is. Miller went to the Indians. Indians get to the World Series. Clint Frazier still hasn't become a regular outfielder with the Yankees.
Yeah.
So they're on the downside there. The Gleyber Torres trade was probably his best trade of all time because he rented out Chapman, got Gleyber Torres, a 2-time All Star,
and
got Chapman back. So I mean, that would be the centerpiece.
There's not a.
Great move.
A pitcher who can make a difference.
No.
Like Verlander.
No. He doesn't seem to be able to, and I don't know if it's he's reticent to pull to push the button. I don't know if he's been burned too many times in the past, the Randy Johnson pickups, you know, picking up these guys too late. I mean, that's the one thing that everybody was like, Baumgartner. And you know as well as I do, past performance does not dictate future success. No matter how much that Madison Baumgartner has done in the past, and I looked it up.
You have to take a chance.
No, but you have to take a chance. But, I mean, everybody was like, this will put us to the top. This will get, and that's what the Yankees did. That's what fans are – I'm not going to say Yankees, but that's what fans want. When they want these trades, they think it's going to work out like Verlander happened to work out that year, and it was a guarantee. Like you said, you take a chance. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Verlander is the example of it working out so well. But we can find other examples where it didn't.
I think Baumgartner could have the Yankees over the top.
Yeah, could have. But
we're never gonna know.
But
and I would have taken a chance on him.
I don't, and I'm not.
He was not going to be traded.
I'm not disputing it would have been a worthwhile, and I think they should have done it if they could have done it. I think
the Giants are back in the wild card.
I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it, but I was just saying what I'm just saying is I'm listening to the pundits who say, well, Madison Baumgartner makes the Yankees that's a win. You don't know. I mean, Madison Baumgartner could come here and have lost it. We don't. But it would have been a step in the right direction for damn sure. It was worth getting. If you could get him, yes, you get him. But I just don't like the fact that it's what you said drives me crazy is you listen to they get Baumgartner, they're winning it. They still got to do a lot of stuff.
Nothing is ever.
I understand. I understand.
But you want to try to improve your team to give yourself a better chance.
Yeah,
I'm just saying
that people, even though
you weigh the pros and cons,
even though it didn't happen, it may turn out to be in the long run, you know, like they always say, sometimes the trades not made are the best trades of all time.
Well, that's the flip side of it, I suppose. suppose that's the positive side. Does this help the Yankees 2-3 years down the road and maybe Castro's taking a long-term approach? I mean, the window's not closing for the Yankees after this year.
No, it's not. And the thing you got to think about is
if you got a chance to win a title, go for it.
Let me give you a hypothetical here, and you know me.
Especially the Yankees.
Why am I defending the Magic Rat? But I'm defending the Magic Rat here.
Yesterday.
No, because it's my world famous flip flop. Here's the deal. You sit there and Madison Baumgartner, you get him, and of course, if he came here, you have to rework his contract, right? He would want a new contract. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So you have to sign him. Now you sign him.
No, he's a 2-month rental.
No, wait, how about this one? But he wouldn't come here unless you redid his contract. You remember, he's got refusal, right?
No, they could have worked it out.
So go in my hypothetical for once.
All right.
Here it is. So he come here without reworking his contract. So you do that. And now, all of a sudden, because we know that this Yankee team, unlike the George years, try to be, I don't want to say frugal, but they want to
keep restrained.
Now, at the end of this year, Gerrit Cole's going on the market. He's going to be a free agent. So if you got Baumgartner, now all of a sudden the Steinbrenners say, well, you got Baumgartner, you don't get Gerrit Cole. Maybe what Cashman was thinking, and I'm just throwing this out there, maybe he's thinking, look, we got a chance. We got as good a chance as anybody, well, until the Astros seemingly put the nail in the coffin the other day with their third. But we don't know how great he's going to be. But anyways, we have as good a chance as anybody right now to take this. And I can get Gerrit Cole in the offseason. Instead of getting Baumgartner and giving up players, and probably if I was the Giants, I'd say, you better give me Torres. Or you better give me somebody that I'm giving you my best chip. If I give you Baumgartner, that means I'm telling we've won 19 out of 20, whatever they were at the time. I'm giving up on this season, even though it looks like we've got a chance to get into the playoffs with Madison Baumgartner. I'm giving up on this. So you better give me somebody like Gleyber Torres back. So I can go to my people and say, look, I got our all-star for the next 10 years out of this. So, I mean, that's what he was probably up against. And like I said, you got to start looking at that minor league system that he's put together, the players he has down there, and maybe they aren't as good as everybody thinks they are. Maybe they just do a good job of
– it's possible. Maybe other teams are asking too much. I mean, you're not going to know the inner workings. But okay, again, Baumgartner – and Syndergaard were not available because they're pulled them back off the market. But could they not have done something to get Bauer or Stroman?
Who
would help that rotation immensely, I think?
Because they
beat by the Mets and the Indians.
The genius of the Brodmeister, the Brodman.
And for the third straight
Dude,
year.
Dude, Brody got you, babe. Brody got you. He went to the table, all in.
I think the Astros won the trade.
But Brody, the Brodmeister.
He's
got his plan.
That remains.
There he is. I'll give you. Here's Brody talking about his plan. Here's Brody. Here's our boy. The best GM in baseball, my friend.
Foremost, I think that it's important for everyone to remember and know what our mission is here. Our focus at the trade deadline really isn't different than what our focus was early in the off season, and what I hope will be our focus every day as we go forward. And that's pretty simply to try to win now and to win in the future. Our focus at this trade deadline was going to be to try to see if we could improve the team not only for the rest of this year, but also as we look towards the off season and heading into 2020 by acquiring Marcus Stroman. We felt like we had an opportunity to add one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, a guy who has Long Island and New York roots, a player who thrives in big moments and craves competition and wants to be part of something great. Jason Vargas has been a great teammate to our team. He has worked very hard and he's had a very good year. It was a difficult player to move, but the opportunity to bring Marcus in here, we feel like builds upon what we already had was an elite rotation, and hopefully will now give us one of the best rotations in all of baseball as we continue to move forward into the month of August. We evaluated a lot of different opportunities, but the short version of my comments here is that we wanted to make sure we only considered moves that were going to improve our club and keep us on mission. And anything short of that was not going to be something that we were ultimately willing to entertain.
Focus, mission. See, he's got all the right words.
Because he's a CEO, not a GM. I think
it was a brilliant move for now.
I think what the Mets did is extremely contradictory. I mean, you get Stroman for just over a year and 2 months. I think they gave up 2 months. That's a good acquisition.
Yeah.
But then you give away, send him to a division opponent. And I'm telling you, he's going to beat the Mets in September. One, lose the wild card by one game. You're going to say, why did Brody send him to a team in the division? Send him to the Padres.
No, I won't, because if you look at Vargas continually, like I said yesterday, his and I think with the him a couple of months ago when he was defending Callaway and got because of that kind of situation. I don't think Jason Vargas is right for this team. You got four young guns that are about the same. And you've got them under control. He's the year anyways. And yes, they got crap back for him. Okay, fine. So they made a deal with the Phillies.
All right. Teams have to beat out for the wild card.
I'm not worried about it. You see, that's all. People actually think the wild card is something the Mets can get. Talk to me. Keep this, okay? First of all, okay. Talk to me when they're closer.
All right.
What I'm looking at right now is you've got DeGrom, you've got Stroman, you've got Syndergaard, all under control for next year. You potentially can now go and get Wheeler. Now you got four under control next year. If you go out and they make the right moves in the offseason, like I said, do at third base daily. But Neil at second. I don't give a crap about Rob. Let's put the young talent out there daily. Take Conforto and say, instead of having you're in center field, you're in right field. I need to see consistency with the bat.
All right.
Develop, get the spots of the kids you're going to have with you all the time in the spots they're going to be in. And then you generally look at the holes and fill the holes. Right now, you've got a starting staff that's going to contain at least three top-line starters next year, maybe four. Plus, if Matt could become even what Vargas is, you know, one of those 500-type pitchers, you can look at what the kind of pitching staff you're going to have. Now, you got to get Diaz straightened out.
You got to improve the bullpen.
Right, but you got to get Diaz straightened out. That's your number one goal. To be, even if you make the wild card, and I understand everybody saying, well, if you get DeGrom, the wild card game, then you get DeGrom, now you start, now you get Syndergaard, and then you get Stroman, and then you got Wheeler. Who else matches up with that? It's like 17 things have to go right for that to happen. I'm looking at getting this team on, like he said, a mission of being good, competitive every year. And I think with this move, it showed they're trying to do something instead of selling pieces off and going, we're going to blow it up. It seems in today's sports, you're either competing or blowing it up. Well, the Mets just, for once, a team sat there and said, we're not going to blow it up. We're going to try and improve on what we got and will keep working and improving at it. Why do – you know, everybody's like, yeah, give up Syndergaard, give up Wheeler, take back prospects. You know what prospects are? They're what the guys went searching for in the hills, gold, and they never could find. You know,
gold in them are hills.
Yeah, it's sports is a pyramid. For every kid that's playing in double A, triple A, single A, whatever, how many are going to make it to the major leagues and how many are going to be all-stars? I mean, the odds are against all these prospects. So go with the sure things when you can get them. And they got Stroman. And
for 1 year.
Yeah.
Plus 2 months.
But you don't know if that Anthony Kay is ever going to be anything. For the next 18 months that I have a top-flight pitcher on my staff. And next year, at this time, when the Yankees and those people come shopping, they're going to come shopping to me.
Okay. Kay was one of your top prospects in your system.
We go again. What did we just talk about with the Yankees? Nobody wants their freaking top prospects. Really, because the Yankees have this great farm system. You think people would be making trades right and left for all those prospects they got?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. Prospects are prospects. They're gambles. They're whatever. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, you can't. I just the few players around for the Mets right now. You've got Alonso. You've got McNeil. Conforto can be a solid major league player. He'll be a nice number six.
Okay.
Out in right field. Nothing spectacular. I'm not expecting all-star years out of him. But then you've got DeGrom. The guy's 29 or 30 right now. You invested in him for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Do you want to be rebuilding so by the time, you know, he's ready to win, he's not the pitcher he used to be? And you got to rebuild on the fly with this. And the way to rebuild on the fly is at least now you've got a guy that's a bargaining chip. You know, if you hold on to Anthony Kay and he turns out to be nothing, what are you going to have? At least Stroman next year, if you have to trade him, will bring you back two or three good prospects from somebody.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sorry. The value is – it was – for what they gave up, they got a borderline all-star pitcher.
All right. Do you think the Mets are going to be in a position where they can win next year?
I have to see what they do in the offseason. I'm not going to – I think if they're doing – if they do what their due diligence and do what they're supposed to do, I haven't looked at the free agent market next year. I haven't looked at who will be trade bait.
You're going to say they Brody made a great trade in Stroman, but he didn't exactly have a good first off season.
No, he didn't. And the thing I think what he's learned, I hope he's learned, is he's not an agent anymore. You know, I think maybe he had too much loyalty to some of his past clients. You know, maybe he felt like he had to give them an olive branch. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you for sure, but I mean, you know, Frazier's going to be gone. Okay. So you got JD Davis. Like I said, I keep hitting JD Davis and I don't think he's going to be an all-star, but I can see a solid third baseman there. Maybe if we got it, if you put him out there, let's see if he can be a solid third baseman. You know, with this pitching staff, all you need is solid players. You don't need to have the Yankee, you know, guys that can bludgeon people. You need a solid team that can produce 4 and 5 runs a game, and they have been doing that.
Yeah.
So
but you also need a solid bullpen. Which they do not have.
I know, but you know, bullpens are tricky. I've always, you know, I people think it's so easy to put together a bullpen.
I'm not saying it's easy.
No, I mean the Yankees. The Yankees are really this is why we live in this area. So everything is compared to the Yankees. But, I mean, how many teams really have the wherewithal? I mean, this is where I'll give Brian Cashman some credit. I mean, he went out, and Zach Britton is a closer. If he went on the Yankees, he'd be a closer somewhere.
Yeah.
But chances would probably be a closer somewhere. You know, most of the guys, he's filled up his bullpen with closers.
He's got like 3 closers.
Right. Whereas most guys are trying.
Ottavino could probably close.
Right. Most of the guys are. You have one, most bullpens have one closer, and you hope to find the hot hands. Look at how the Red Sox turned over their bullpen from last year. Most teams have to turn over their bullpen every year.
I think not signing Kimbrel was a huge mistake.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just talking about the, and I'm not talking about the I'm talking about those integral players, like when the Mets had Turk Wendell.
Yeah.
And one year he was the best seventh inning man, it seemed, in baseball. And the next year he couldn't get anybody out.
Right.
These middle of the middle of the bullpen guys, unless you do what Cashman did, and you go out and you get yourself a bunch of closers who are willing to fill these roles. You know, the top of the line guys usually want to be a closer and nothing else. You don't usually get a top of the line guy who sits there and goes, "Yeah, I'll be the seventh inning guy." That doesn't usually happen. But it happens for the Yankees. But every other team, you watch these bullpens, everybody's looking for bullpen help.
Yeah.
How many teams went out and got bullpen help? Why? Because it's always a shaky thing. You ride a hot hand. You ride a guy, usually, you don't have these teams set up and go, "Well, that's my seventh inning guy, my eighth inning guy, my ninth inning guy." You go, "That's my closer, and we'll ride this guy for a couple weeks, and then he's not pitching. Then we'll ride this guy to set him up, and then we'll ride this guy to set him up." So, I mean, that's where, you know, everything.
Are you of the opinion that if you don't have a good bullpen, you're not going to win?
Ever in baseball?
The way the game is now?
Yeah, you got to have a good bullpen. You have to have, it's part of the game.
You know, so, it's an important cog of the Mets.
It is, but everybody thinks, "I want bullpen help." It's not that easy.
Nobody said it was easy.
You look, yes, people do say it's easy. They go, "The Mets should have addressed their bullpen." Okay, name me the player out there. Name me the bullpen guy that they could have gone out and got. Okay, Ottavino, the Yankees, they could have had him. Outside of him, who else could they have brought in? Who else did they miss the boat on?
Well, that's why you're supposed to do your research, supposed to do your homework.
Yeah, but you see, sometimes it's just picking that guy in the right year. I mean, sometimes it is just – how many, I'm trying to think of some Yankee guys that were good one year and it sucked the next year. You know, those middle – I'm telling you, outside of closers, in the middle of a bullpen, you try and – you're always tinkering. You're always bringing a guy up to fill in. You're always trying to – you're getting a guy off waivers. You're always doing something like that. It's not that easy. People just sit there and go, "Build me a bullpen. Build me an outhouse." You know, I'm sorry. It's just – I hear they don't study these things and go, "Okay, how easy is the bullpen?" It's not that easy. Marin Rivera had Stanton and Nelson for 3 or 4 years.
Ramiro Mendoza.
Yeah, okay, but they spent the rest of the time that he was there trying to put together guys that were that consistent with him. And you know what? They never really did. They never found those setup guys. You had a job at Chamberlain for a little while. You had this guy for a little while. But the Yankees never were always experimenting, always bringing in someone new. Every team with their bullpens outside of their closers experiments. They bring up guys from the minor leagues. They bring on guys, veterans. They do things. They're always – you just hope to work it out. So that's what I feel about the bullpen. But what the Mets will have is they will have – four pitchers that can give them 6 or 7 innings.
Which the Yankees do not have.
Okay. So you got four pitchers to give you 6 or 7 innings. The only time you're going to have to really worry and get deep into your bullpen is if Matt stays being Matt. And Matt might be a guy that if they pick up somebody in the offseason or maybe ends up bringing somebody from the minor leagues, I still look at Matt and I see Andrew Miller written all over him. A 3-inning, you know, a guy can give you a 1-inning, a 2-inning, a 3-inning, a lefty specialist that can fill that role.
Yeah, well, they did put him in the bullpen.
No, but he's starting again. Yeah.
Well, all right. I mean, if these prospects turn out, you know, you could regret this trade, but time only will show.
But only is, why would I regret the trade? If Stroman can get me, if he turns into, and this is numbers, okay, don't hold me these numbers. I'm just throwing these numbers out to say so people know a reference what I'm talking about. If he's a 15, you know, a 13 to 17 game winning type pitcher for me, he's filling his need. He's doing his job for me. Anthony Kay, if he becomes a Cy Young in Toronto, it doesn't mean he was doing it in New York. You shut the door on these guys. You move on. I don't care. I got the second best pitcher, maybe the second or third best pitcher available on the market.
For 1 year.
For 1+ year. Got him the rest of this year and 1 year. And you know what? You know what the Yankees got? You got a retiring guy who's worried about what he's going to put on his freaking Cooperstown plaque, if he thinks he's getting there. You got another.
He's getting there.
You got a questionable Tanaka. You got a questionable Paxton. You got a bunch of questionable.
They're all questionable.
So, I mean, I'll take what I got.
They're also 20 the games over 500.
Well, I'll take what I got.
Right.
I'm sorry. And I'm like we discussed yesterday and you didn't like it. Just because the Yankees were some season doesn't mean they can't collapse in the second half of the season.
Anything's possible.
Talk about Aaron Judge.
I'm the most pessimistic person in the world. I don't think anything's wrapped up yet.
Let's talk about Aaron Judge. Are you worried?
I'm terrified.
Yeah, you know, but the way he's playing, the way he's hitting.
Yes. It's not the first time we've seen this with him.
Do you think
he goes into these slumps for 2-3 weeks? He looks totally clueless to play, like he's wearing a blindfold. And he does nothing but strike out because he's got this long looping swing.
I heard on the radio someone brought up a good speculation the other night because they say he's going to right field a lot more than he usually does. And there's nothing wrong with going to right field, but they feel that he is being bothered by that. It's still either it's not totally healed or it's still he doesn't have the confidence in it where he's trying to take everything to right and he's pushing the ball instead of the ball.
It's a legitimate consideration.
So why didn't you trade him? No, I mean, it's like...
I still think that lineup tends to be too homer-centric.
Well, it does, especially when you... If you get Stanton back, if you get Stanton Judge, because they're your home runner bust.
Well, when you're getting home runs from Mike Tauchman and Romine, I guess you're doing okay, and they are getting contributions from all 25, and you need that to have a great team. And you know, yesterday was another one of these sort of... Not miraculous, but come from behind wins that can lift the team. And you know, I told you it's a strange team. They can be flat for 5-6 innings and then just explode. I mean, they looked awful against Granke. Now, maybe the best thing that happened on Wednesday was the rain.
Right.
But you know, the lineup can be streaky.
Yeah.
But they're still second in the major leagues in runs. So I don't know. I mean, is it like you expect them to score 10 runs every game?
Well, I mean, that's basically what they're built to do. I mean, the good thing is, I mean, if they have a lead going into this by later in the seventh inning, they're in good shape on paper. Britton and Chapman and Betances if he comes back to McGill.
I'm real concerned about Chapman too.
Well, I mean, I'd be concerned about Britton from when I hear his velocity's way down. Has Boone. I mean, as kind of, I'm going to put you on the spot here. As Boone mismanaged this bullpen, as he used it too much, was it worth the 29 games over 500 they are if he's burned out this bullpen?
I'm just not sure he's had much choice.
But sometimes, okay, if you're in the lead by, I know what you're going to say to me, but I'm going to say it anyways.
Right.
If you're in the lead by 7 games and you're 12 games over 500 or 15 games over 500, and you just sat there and you go, well, just blow up this game. Let's let it go. You know, just let it go. I'm not going to bring my bullpen guys in. You know, Joe Girardi did that a few times.
I think Boone's done that a couple of times.
But
they haven't had a lot of blowout losses.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, instead of this game, we can maybe win it, maybe not win it. If I don't bring Britton in this situation, I'm going to give him an extra day off to rest that arm.
Yeah.
You know, take the chances and see what happens.
You'll lose a battle to try to win a later war.
I get that.
I think every team does that. I think Blue's done that a couple of times. There haven't been a lot of games where they've been really blown out. Now, there was criticism I read that he took to knock out too soon on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch the game. It was work following it on the computer. Just seeing that he couldn't throw strikes. I mean, it was only 2-1. Did he have to go to the bullpen in the fifth? I don't know. Maybe not. But, you know, these pitchers are at 100 pitches in the fifth inning. And
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they don't get length.
Well, I mean, it is. And it's basically a really bad problem they've had all year long. It doesn't seem like – and like I said, there was no moves made to do anything about it at the trade deadline. So the Yankees are going to be what the Yankees are going to be. Oh, by the way, just I wanted to say this. We didn't say it already. If you want to join in, 323-417-6701. We take phone calls, too. Please join in. And if you have an opinion on the Yankees and how they're blowing it and the Mets, how they're building for the future, please join our conversation.
Do you think the Yankees can blow the 7-game lead?
Oh, yeah, I think they can blow the 7-game lead, but I think they're in the playoffs. I think they could find themselves in a wild card. I think they very easily could blow it. I think if the signs of doom, like I said, if Britton is tired, if Chapman's tired, if Betances, yeah, I mean it's a bunch of ifs here. Betances has right now. You need Betances and you need Severino to come back. You need them. They're a definite need.
You need them for the playoffs.
But you don't. You're not gonna. But you got to get them back soon to have them ready for the playoffs. I mean, Betances is not so much as Severino. Severino, right now we're this is August. Severino, they're still not, I don't know what stage they're at their rehab.
I don't know where he is.
Yeah. So I mean, you're talking about
are we targeting Labor Day for these guys?
I mean, you're going past that.
What?
You've missed Labor Day, right?
Not necessarily.
For a starting pitcher?
What?
If he's not starting, his rehab assignments.
He can do a rehab in 2 weeks.
I disagree. Not a guy. He hasn't pitched all year. This is like spring training. This isn't a guy who went on a 15-day disabled list. He's been gone for so long. This is spring training all over again. That means you start him out with 3 innings. You start him out to 5.
I think he is working out.
Yeah, but how much is it? Yeah, but it's not. Is he throwing? Is he throwing off flat? Is he throwing off the mound? What's he doing?
I think he's just throwing off the mound. He's not facing live pitching.
Right.
Or live batters.
Well, you have to back it up on that. But I mean, if he's where I think he is, I'm saying he's back probably middle of September.
Okay, so he gets 3 starts.
Yeah.
Right.
Did that give me enough?
It might be.
Might not.
But are you saying the Yankees could blow a 7-game lead because you believe that, or you are hoping that?
What's the difference?
Maybe a little bit of both.
No, I mean, I think they really would have to.
Anything's possible.
Yeah, they would have to. It would have a lot of things. The wheels would have to really come off for them to blow this. I mean, this 4-game series. If the Red Sox win 3 out of 4,
I'm not even talking about the Red Sox. I'm talking about the Rays.
Yeah, but if the Red Sox win 3 out of 4, and the Rays win throughout their weekend. I mean,
could be down to 5.
Yeah.
I mean, the Red Sox are back to 12 out in the loss column.
Yeah, but
that's a lot in early August.
I know it is.
It's a real lot. You know, it's like those 3 wins against the Yankees last weekend have been erased.
Yeah, well, they
got swept by the Rays.
I understand that. But they still can do enough damage to take the Yankees down.
Well, how's this scenario? I assume the Red Sox have 2 series left with the Rays in September.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose we're mid-September and the Rays are within 3 or 4 games. You got to root for the Red Sox against the Rays. As unpleasant as that thought is.
I don't have to. You have to.
Yeah.
I know it's a bad thing.
I mean, it's like rooting for ISIS. But I mean, I'm going to have no choice.
This
Rays team just doesn't go away.
No, they don't.
You know, they lose the first two of the Red Sox last week. They lose Blake Snell. They look done. And now they're tied for the second wild card. But, you know, the Red Sox are now, never mind the division, they're 3.5 games behind the second wild card. Not the first wild card, the second wild card. I mean, their season could be on the brink here.
Well, I mean, you know, the Red Sox were playing with house money coming in. You know, they went into the season with their head ballooned up. Things went wrong early. And like I said early in the year to you, I said, you know, everything went right for them last year.
It did.
I mean, to win 108 games, I've been through it as a Met fan. You win 108 games, it means everything goes right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're playing with house money. I don't think even the Red Sox are worried about them. The thing that I saw this weekend,
the fans are.
Well, yeah, but to a point, but not as much as they used to be. It wasn't like this is post 2004 Red Sox fans. They've won a bunch of times.
Well, you know.
If the Yankees were to win it, it would make it a bigger thing. But I mean, the fact of the matter is they've won more than the Yankees over the last 20 years.
If you can guarantee me a title every 5 years, I suppose I'll accept missing the playoffs every now and then.
Now, here's the thing, and I don't know if you read the article. Did you read the Peter Gammons article about Mookie Betts?
I did not.
Okay, well, you didn't read the article, but we'll put it out there. Peter Gammons, who probably one of the best sports writers in America, and usually has, of all the guys out there, if Peter Gammons talks about it, I usually put it as there's something behind this. And he's talking about the Red Sox not wanting to re-sign Mookie Betts, not wanting to go long-term with him, which I think would be a big mistake. Here's a guy who is the face of your franchise. He's not having as good a year last year he's had, or this year as he did last year. But last year was an astronomical year. I mean, there's
still having a pretty good
year. Yeah, and he's a guy who can play. He can play outfield. He can play second base for you. He does. He's a five-tool type guy. And to me, it's like it would be like the Astros getting rid of Altuve.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know what, you know, even there's certain players that you have to pay because they're important to you. And he's one of them. I don't get it. Where the Red Sox?
I think he's one of the top five best players in the game.
Yeah.
Even in somewhat of an off year.
Yeah. So
when you told me that yesterday, I was floored.
I mean,
Red Sox have the highest payroll in baseball. Are they looking to cut payroll?
I don't know. Maybe the Red Sox feel that they've won enough to pacify their fans for a little while. And rebuild again. I mean, the one thing I will say about the Red Sox is if you look from 2004 till today, they won four championships?
Four championships.
And all their rosters had major turnover on it.
Yes.
So it's like they've done this before, and they might just feel, hey, we can do it again. You know, we can, you know, our player, we're not going to get stuck, you know, with these 10-year contracts, these 9-year contracts, and dealing with the, you know, redoing these guys, you know, and we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to. We'll do the smart things. We'll rebuild fast, but we'll rebuild. You know, maybe we're thinking, Mookie Betts, you know, moves out of his way, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody else comes right in there.
I'm not sure their minor league system is that great.
We're going back to the minor league system. Maybe it is that great, and they just don't overhype it like the Yankees do.
All right.
I mean, I don't know. I who knows? Maybe they got their eye on somebody else. Maybe they've got to move. That they can make, that they think they can get.
How about a Betts for Trout trade?
My God, that would be.
It would be one of the blockbusters of all time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. But I don't think that's staying on. If you're gonna.
Well, if they're looking to dump Charlie with Betts, they're not.
Yeah, you know, $40 million.
I just threw that out.
Yeah, I mean, Mookie Betts would look good in Mets uniform. I didn't tell you that much.
But getting back to the Red Sox, Tuesday night, I'm following the game. On the computer, and it's in the 6-5 in the eighth, and the Red Sox leave the bases loaded, and in the ninth they leave first and third, and it's like they never got that clutch hit. Last year they won.
Yeah, and, that's the difference between winning 100 games and winning 100 games, or 95.
You talk about the Yankees giving up a lot of runs. In the last four games, the Red Sox have given up 9, 6, 8, 9.
I tell you, last year,
how do you figure prices, Chris Sale struggles?
Well, I mean, that's should be the symptom that shows everybody how lucky and good they were last year. They lost Sale, on DL last year or twice?
Twice, I think.
You lose your ace twice and you still win 108 games. I mean, that's just everything goes right for you. I mean, I just think, I think that maybe. Even their GMs realized, look, last year was just a blessed year. We were like under the right star. And, you know, what am I going to do? I can't reinvent that again. It just has – it happened. So we're going to ride this out and see what happens, you know.
I'm still never going to write that team off because the lineup is just too good.
It is.
You know, but they have a lot of guys sitting around 300, a couple over 300. And, you know – 3.5 is not that much with still 2 months to go. But if it gets to 5, then the A's do take 3 out of 4, so sort of return a little bit of a favor. The thing about the Red Sox now is, you know, they come to the stadium 4 games back. They're a wounded animal, and the wounded animal is the most dangerous animal. And they seem to play well against the Yankees. And you know, they celebrated twice at the stadium last year. And maybe the Rays just match up better than against the Red Sox and the Yankees do. As
it could
odd
be.
As that sounds,
It could just be, sometimes teams have each other's numbers. I mean, it's just a well-known fact. It's not for baseball. Infinitum.
No, the A's still do lead the season series 7-4.
Yeah, but I mean,
the three games last week were bad.
Yeah, and they got pounded.
And getting that last one was huge.
Yeah, but they got pounded. That was the whole thing. It was Boston Massacre
and
in reverse.
And you enjoyed it.
Yeah, of course I did.
Yeah.
Every single moment of it. It was great to watch. Now, I don't know if you're prepared to talk about this today because I know you didn't watch it. I didn't watch it, but I heard last night in the Hall of Fame game, we had interference reviewed for the first time.
I did not watch the Hall of Fame game.
Who would watch the Hall of Fame game? I that's the dumbest game in the world. I mean, but I know you're not a big pro football fan anymore. You're under your protest towards it.
No, my protest was canceled last year.
Okay. Pass interference has long been one of the toughest penalties in football. For years, I was of the assumption it would be better to do the college game where you get 15 yards and not spot of the foul.
I would be in favor of that.
The only thing is, but as somebody said and pointed out, one of the pundits pointed out, is that, well, guys going for a touchdown, give up to 15 yards any time in a week.
You just tackle.
Yeah. They do it more often then. But that had being as it may, now we're going to have review. Now, you know as well as I do, anybody who watches football, there's interference on every play, just like just holding on every play.
Well, so they're going to enforce offensive holding. Are we going to have 30 penalties a game?
Yeah.
Are we going to have 3.5 hour, 4 games?
Yeah.
4 hour games?
Yeah. And then with it just being set back and back and back, they gain a first down, then they have 4 holding penalties and they move back. So the game never gets past midfield. But the whole thing is, with me is like, okay, you're going to review these plays. Is it going to be who institutes the contact first? Is it the guy you catch fighting back? Who gets the flag? And how do you – okay, you're going to overrule because that guy pushed off first. That guy was – we caught him pushing back. I mean, it's just going to be
You mean you could end up getting an offensive pass interference call?
Yeah. Why not?
I didn't.
Well, actually, you can't be ruled over late, but you may be called off. How are you – what I'm basically saying is – bumping goes on every play. So every play you can call interference.
Well, I will say this. The CFL, a couple of years ago, instituted review for pass interference, and it seems to be going pretty smoothly. Now, I don't know who follows the CFL, but,
yeah.
Are we going to have 10 challenges a game on interference?
Yeah. I mean, it's a pass-happy time.
I mean, do
Well, I mean, my I,
when,
no,
when,
I don't think you'd increase challenges, but I mean, now you're going to, I mean, I don't know.
At what point of the game was the challenge last night?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
So I don't know. But I mean, first of all, it's in a preseason game.
I mean, it would be ridiculous to challenge the first play of the game.
No, but I'm just saying it's a preseason game. They're doing it early.
Now, you know how, sometimes they say they're going to crack down on offensive holding in the preseason and then the regular season starts and, they go back to how it was. How about this? You get 2 challenges a game just for interference. That's it.
Yeah, at this point, why can't we not get away from the challenges altogether? Just you put a referee upstairs. If it's a play that looks close, and just hit the button and say, we got it wrong, fix it. Every game is televised. I don't know. It just seems we go through this stuff. It's like, well, is he going to throw the flag? He's going to throw the flag. He threw the flag. Okay, let's go. Now we go underneath the hood. So this guy can look it over again and see if they made a mistake. And of course, he doesn't want to look bad. So he's going to be looking, instead of a guy looking upstairs and going, you obviously made a mistake. Just overrule it. We've got the technology to do it and just fix it and get it right. Isn't it about getting it right? I don't know. Now they're just adding more and more
to
the
concern agreement. Is that the game becomes too micromanaged. It goes longer. It becomes unwatchable. There's too many penalties. There's no flow. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm turned off to some degree, with the NFL. Replay has made professional sports worse.
Yeah, because it's become it really, for the amount of things that they get right, is all those ones where you sit there and go, you still believe it's wrong, but they say inconclusive evidence.
And, the NFL wasn't proactive. It was reactive.
Yeah.
It's always reactive.
Well, yeah. And still, you've had, even though it wasn't reviewable last year, the penalty that's in arms, everybody in national TV saw it, knew it was a penalty. Everybody saw it and knew it was a penalty. And it was like nobody could just sat there and hit a button and go, man, you missed that by a mile. Fix it.
Well, how about the NFL just coming out and say, we screwed up? Doesn't change the call, but just being honest, you're being transparent with the fans, or discipline the referees.
But that's where I'm saying, instead of this challenge thing, instead of this freaking challenge thing, you put an honest guy up there, a referee.
Isn't that how it's kind of done in college?
Yeah, well, I guess. But I'm just saying it. Put an eye in the sky up there. Boop. You missed that one. Fix it. Overruled. We're picking up the flag. Don't even say you made a mistake. We're picking up the flag. There was no penalty.
So there's somebody in the booth that presses a button. It goes down to the game officials, and the play gets reviewed up in the booth.
Right.
Without an actual challenge.
Right.
How long would that take?
I would assume as long as it takes right now. I mean, although you don't have to go through the challenge of the guy, you may seem to save seconds of a guy searching for his red flag, then going over to the referee and saying, this is what I think happened, and the referee going upstairs and saying, we're going to review it for this. You know, give the guy, look, you just missed it. You're in charge. The guy upstairs is the head official. You missed it, guys. Review that. I reviewed it. You missed it. Put up the flag. There was no penalty. It's all over with in seconds.
How about just flat out improving the officiating?
Well, I've my theory in that.
Former players.
You go. You got a bunch of guys that are cut from teams every year. You got a bunch of guys that are retired. They're still in good physical shape. And you hire them. There's a multi-billion. Don't tell me you don't have the money in the NFL.
The NFL has the money.
You could have full-time officials. And they could be working with the teams during the week. You assign them whatever city they're in. If whatever team they're close to, you go over and you work with the team. So you're there on the field. If they want you to step in there.
You mean like if you're doing a scrimmage?
Yeah.
Scrimmage?
Right. Going over to even walking into a lineman's meeting and going, look, if you do this, we're going to call holding. If you don't do this.
Yeah.
Doing things like that. You could be, there's plenty of ways to utilize them outside of their Sunday.
And then they could have a camp.
Right.
Like the players have a preseason camp. These ex-players,
right.
Assuming the officials do not have a camp themselves.
Right.
I'd be in favor of that. I think I mentioned that when you brought it up the first time. I'd be in favor of it.
I mean, these guys are in good physical, top physical condition still. They can keep up with the players. They can run with them. They can be down there. They're on top of the play. Instead of these guys that are 7 years old, my shape, trying to keep up with a freaking world-class sprinter.
Did you see this lawsuit in New Orleans is still going on?
I know. That's just so ridiculous. It's just, yeah, the only thing is, was it bad? Yes. But when you think of all the crimes that are really going on in this world, of the things that really matter, there are people that, that need help from the legal system. And a frivolous lawsuit like this is tying up a judge, a jury, a courtroom.
It is.
And these people, you got a guy, it's one thing, this guy, these guys have the money to do it. I think one of them is a lawyer, actually, who's doing the lawsuit.
Yeah.
So, but the fact of the matter is, like, you have people that are paying lawyers week after week, waiting for their day in court, running out of money. But, no, this guy, because of a bad call in an NFL game, And
So, look, I would love to have Roger Goodell have to sit in the courtroom for 3 or 4 hours and give testimony just to inconvenience. But at the end of the day, what's going to change?
Nothing.
The outcome of the game is not changing.
No. Especially.
Okay, what are you going to say? You go to the guy and go, what do you want me to do? Well, New Orleans should have won the game. So New Orleans should have won the game, but the Rams didn't win the Super Bowl. So now you're telling me that we're going to have to take away the Super Bowl championship from New England, who had nothing to do with it, and invalidate that because New Orleans wasn't there? I mean, what's the end game here?
And you know, if Goodell does get deposed, what could the line of questioning possibly be?
Well, the end game is, what is the end?
Well, he wants to give the money to charity, and he wants the NFL screwed up.
What is the price tag of the loss for him?
He's a fan. There's no price tag for him.
Well, I mean, is this going to be like the famous Donald Trump lawsuit against the NFL when he was with the New Jersey Generals, where they won a dollar? They won the lawsuit and they got a dollar?
That was an antitrust lawsuit.
But I mean, is this going to be that type of a stupid judgment where, yeah, okay, you're right, the NFL is wrong. Here's your dollar. You know, it's like, what is it there to prove? It makes no sense. And like I said, it's one of those things where they're tying up the court for no apparent reason, for nothing.
The lawyer wants the NFL to come out and say, we screwed up. And okay, the NFL says we screwed up. What has changed?
Nothing.
Maybe the NFL has to eat a little humble pie.
Well, the NFL,
but the outcome of the game has not changed.
Right, and what the NFL is going to say is, we now have a rule to fix it.
The NFL would say that, yes.
We've fixed it. We've addressed it. So what's your problem? You're still going to watch us. You're still going to be there every Sunday rooting for us. So shut up.
I mean, it is a ridiculous lawsuit. I don't know. These games, they're micromanaged.
We got the NFL starting up now. That's okay. Now that we've had the Hall of Fame game, we're going to start up again.
Well, we'll get some regular preseason games.
Yeah. The Jets and Giants are squaring off first game of the preseason this year.
Wow, tremendous.
I know. We'll see nobody for nobody. That's the whole thing is like this. The preseason football games, I mean, at least when we were younger, the players would play. I mean, you'd see the starting team would come out for the first series in the first game. Then they play a quarter. Then they play a half. Then they play in the third quarter. And then next week they go. Now they don't even dress. Joe Flacco was not even in uniform last night.
I thought he was going to get a couple of series.
Maybe he did. When I saw him, he was sitting in there and he didn't have his shoulder. Maybe it's something after he took his shoulder pads off. But so maybe I'm wrong there. But I mean, it's like, what is preseason football if you're not going to play? And you wonder why these guys come September get hurt, aren't ready to play, is because they're not conditioned.
Well, they're not conditioned because they're not practicing enough because of the new union rules.
Yeah. And I understand.
Right?
I agree.
I don't think they do 2 days anymore.
No, and you can't be in pads, you can't do anything anymore. So I mean, is that working against the players? We're gonna see. We'll see what happens.
Would you be in favor of an 18-game season?
Yes, I would be.
I wouldn't.
Why? You're playing 20 games now. Just take away two preseason games. Preseason games are nothing anymore. So just play two extra regular season games and put an extra bye in there.
Well, if you took away the two preseason games, maybe.
Yeah, and then put
an extra... Isn't the season long enough as it is?
I don't know. Football is... It's the one sport where you can actually legitimately... want more. Every other sport.
Oh, I don't know.
Every other sport, you get to a certain point where it's like, is the season over yet? Can we start to play? Football, I tell you, it's the one sport where I always seem to go, God, I wish they had another couple of weeks before we get to the playoffs.
Nothing like those games in late November between a 3-9 team and a 2-10 team. Boy, you really get up for those games.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a team that's vying for playoffs. Hey, if there was an 18-game schedule last year, the Giants might have made it.
Well, they make it 20.
They were getting better. Well, you make it 25.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I just think it 18 games is a good number. I mean, if you want to keep it at 16, I'm fine with it. I'm not going to campaign for or against it because I just know. But I know when football's over,
I
miss it.
I have absolutely little interest in the preseason games. If I'm out and they're on, I might pay a little attention.
Unless you have a relative playing in those games.
But I'm telling you, baseball.
Your best players don't even play in it. I mean, why would you risk those guys?
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. It's like, you know, and that's the one thing that there was someone who was talking about the Giants on the way up here today about Daniel Jones checking the boxes. He's looked great, and it's fantastic. Yeah, 7-on-7 drills with no
hits. Are the Giants going to have any receivers available when they start the season?
Well,
our friend Golden Tate doing?
You know, they're the guy. You know, there's so many jokes. Did you hear the story behind it?
It's a fertility drug.
Yeah, so it was performance enhancing.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But the right type of performance. I'm just saying, it's like when you think about it, it's how ironic. When you sit there and go, well, you take performance enhancing drugs. Well, yeah, but not that type of performance.
No, no.
Like the things that make me go, like we were talking the other day when Tanaka's on the mound and Gary Sanchez goes out to talk to him and both of them speak through interpreters, but the interpreters aren't out there with them. What are they talking about?
There's a universal language. I don't know.
And the best would be if they cover their mouths. That would just crack me up even more.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, you speak through an interpreter. No one understands it anyways. But, all right, well, we're getting down to the we did a lot of trade stuff. Next week when we come back, we got to start diving into a little football. We'll see how the Mets are making out, the win streak. The Mets, they're plowing their way through Chicago, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the bottom feeders.
Got to beat the bottom feeders too, man. No. You got to beat those too. And you don't know when a bottom feeder will become a powerhouse. It could happen. You never know when these turnarounds are coming. Everybody says, everybody tells me Chicago has one of the best farm systems in baseball next to the Yankees. So, of course, they're on the verge.
I just love baseball in 2019. Here you have a two-game team, two games under 500 on August 2nd, and they're a playoff contender. Yay! Mediocrity reigns.
You finally achieved NFL status. Parity for everybody. Parity. You get a playoff game. You get a playoff game. You get a playoff game. Everybody gets a playoff game.
Everybody gets a playoff game.
We're going to have 15 play-in games.
It's a medal. It's a participation medal.
You will play in a playoff game. You're 20 games under 500, but you're playing in a playoff game.
You know what my a little bit last year is to have like five teams tie for the wild card. And we have to do all these different tiebreaker scenarios.
How would you start?
I don't know.
Jesus. Total run scored. You know what? Yeah, because five head-to-head wouldn't count. Interdivision.
This would be like a true doomsday scenario.
You know what would be the best way to do to solve that? You take the two teams with the best record against the teams that have qualified for the playoffs.
Okay.
Because you figure they give the best competition to the teams in the playoffs.
Okay. I think that's how some college leagues break ties. The record against the next best team in descending order.
Yeah. I think that would be the best way. Because then, you know, if you break down a bunch of these things where you get a team that just can't compete against, why bother? But if you get a guy, if you get, like, say, a team that's, Say the Yankees, Twins, and Astros are in it, and the two teams you have to pick have winning records against those three teams. At least then you know you got a potential competition when they get in there,
yeah.
Instead of a team that may get in there because of tiebreakers that can't compete with anybody.
If you remember last year, there were two tiebreaker games.
Yeah,
I mean the Cubs, the Brewers, play for the division.
Right.
And then the Cubs and the Rockies played for the wild card.
Right.
And that was just to get into the playoffs.
Yeah. And
Joe Maddon needs to be fired yesterday.
He speaks very highly of you. I don't know why you're always trying to put your that pelt on your wall.
The team is totally underachieving.
I don't know. Joe, I like Joe. I think he does a good job. Is he a little bit overrated? Yes.
Kumbaya approach is not working.
Maybe he should stop living in the camper and get himself a hotel room every once in a while. You get some maid service or something. Maybe eating the baked beans in the back of being one of the regular Joe guy isn't going anymore. Maybe he starts spending that big money he's making and staying in real, four-star hotels instead of jerking around like that. Well, anyways, we are going to end it right here. It's the Two Grumpy Old Sports Writers. Hope you enjoyed the chat today.
The banter.
Again, whenever you're listening, if you want to join in, 323-417-6701. We do accept phone calls, and we even let you get a little racy with language if you want, because this is PG-13. We've hit the gamut of baseball today, and next week we're probably going to start chiming in with some football if nothing big happens on the Mets or Yankees. We might have something big happen with the Yankees when the Red Sox take them out of the first place this weekend. No, it won't happen, I know. But
next week.
But anyways, thanks for tuning in. This is Joe Ryan.
And Bob Birch.
We'll be back with you guys next week on the Two Grumpy Old Sports Writers.